think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr.
My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 171 on Low Limit Football on this 31st of July, 2017. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and back for one more week before we start our two-week vacation and then come back to really kick off the European leagues. First off, want to send a congratulations to These Football Times and Beyond the Pitch for their partnership that was announced this past week. We are bringing you the last show before our two-week vacation. We're going to look at the latest in the transfer windows. We're going to have a hard look at the MLS this week after a big week in LA and across the league, especially given the All-Star game coming up on this Wednesday. And after the International Champions Cup, we're going to play Where in the World is Neymar with special guest Andre Forey joining us in a moment. So first off, I want to introduce my co-host, Mr. Rob Rojas. Rob, what's going on, man? How was your week?
Oh, it was good. I mean, I think we both had...
Did I lose you there already?
Hello?
Rob, you still there?
Yes, I can hear you.
That was quick, huh? So it was it was a pretty good week?
Yeah, it was a good weekend. I think both of us had a similar weekend, don't you think, Joe?
Yeah, both of us got to attend the Roma-Juventus match, the International Champions Cup. We got to say hi to the guys at the Italian Football TV group. We got to meet, finally, David Amoyal, who's certainly a big, we're a big fan of his. And it was fantastic to meet him in person out at the game before we got in there. And then we got to see a little football. We got to see Cafu and Paolo Maldini on the sidelines. Pretty great time, I'd say, for you and me. A little hot in the sun, but, got to see some Italian calcio. Got to see the two best teams in Italy go at it with all their best players. So certainly a great time yesterday, without a doubt. So... Rob, I'm going to cut it short. Normally we would kick off our trivia and our opening thoughts, but we're lucky to be joined immediately on tonight's show by our special guest down in Brazil, Andre Forey. Andre, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you back again. Andre, I don't know if you can hear us. We might have lost Andre quickly. I know we had him connected. There we go.
Hi, guys. Can you hear me?
I can. How are you?
Yes, I can hear you.
Thanks.
Yes.
Please, go ahead.
North, but I think we're going to be able to... I can hear you right now.
Okay, good. Thank you for coming back on the show. I want to start off with a question about Manchester City. At the moment, City has the highest expenditure of any team in the top five leagues at £179 million. And with all the money going out on talent, especially the talent that Pep's brought in this year, really solidifying their defense, made some big moves there. Is Pep going to be on the hot seat early? And what would be considered a success for Manchester City this year?
Let's start with the fullbacks. Mm-hmm. I think the key is going to be the play of the guy. wanted to change his his options. Right and on the left, the fullbacks that he could play with last season, physically, especially physically, to play the type of football that Guardiola is known for, to establish in the now with Mendy, although he wanted to do it with Daniel Alves, would be because it would be very easily in this team, the job on the right and Mendy on the left side, and Danilo also, a guy who can play both sides, and he can play in the midfield. If I suppose we're going to be a very different team from last year. Team, the long ball, as we saw in North American tour. So I'm very excited for what we can say, for what we can see in terms of the Pep Guardiola's style of play.
Are they the favorites right now for the EPL title?
I don't think you can pinpoint a competition like the Premier League. We are obligated to talk about three or four teams every year, and they are in the mix. Them as the favorites.
Okay, Andre, I'm gonna cut this off for 1 second. I'm gonna reconnect everybody just because it sounds like, and just confirming this with Rob, that all three of us are breaking up a little bit. So, if you don't mind, and
it's like breaking up a little bit.
Yeah, let's. Can we do that? Can we reconnect? Andre, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
I hear you.
Okay, I'm going to reconnect all of. I'm going to disconnect and reconnect all of us. So just bear with me 1 minute. So of course, as normal with radio, it always gives us a little bit of a hard time. It seems like that never fails. So first, I'm going to get Mr. Rojas back up and running here, and I apologize to the listeners for this. You know, starting the way it started out, but. Hopefully we can clear up these connection problems and go ahead and get things going, you know, very, very well here. So while we're doing that, I'm going to also see if I can connect Andre at the same time. But again, what I think Andre was getting at with his information was that City's done a lot at the defense, especially adding Kyle Walker on the right side and Benjamin Mendy on the left side. To solidify the defense, and then Rob, I still have you there, right?
Yes.
Okay, so let's see if we get Andre back on here and going. So just kind of reiterating what Andre was saying is that, you know, they've done a lot on defense here for Manchester City, adding Kyle Walker, Benjamin Mendy, and then Danilo, who is kind of the wild card because he can play on either side and still go ahead and be functional even in the midfield. He kind of gives them a few options, which I was not aware of with Danilo's abilities. I do know that he played wing back, but I didn't know that he could actually step into the midfield and be a support there. So I think his move to City is actually a little more attractive. So that you know that is interesting to me. Just trying to get Andre added on here again. I think what we may do is if we can't get Andre added on by Skype. We may go to the phone call, Rob, and add him on there. So, and then I wanted to follow up with the favorites to win the EPL title? I know that I'd heard Talk Sport on Sunday. You and I actually were listening, Rob, on our way up to Foxborough to the match, and they were talking about how really the three favorite teams are Chelsea, City, and United at this point. But it is kind of wide open. And I'm going to get at the Alexis Sanchez question with Andre as soon as we can get him back and connected. But, you know, you talk about Spurs quickly. Spurs really have not done much. Losing Kyle Walker, I'm going to go back and look at their transfer record so far this summer.
but really nothing to speak about. They've actually made $75 million. They've brought nobody in, but they've sold Benteleb. They've sold Kyle Walker. Federico Fazio sent to Roma, who we got to see yesterday. Clinton Jai went to Marseille. So, you know, they've made a few moves. I'm going to I think I might try to do this, Rob. I might try to call him instead. You know, so just as I'm efforting that, real quick, you know, what are your thoughts on City, City's move so far, and their ability to, you know, they're considered favorites, and even Spurs at that point, really making money in this window, not spending much.
I think what we've seen this season compared to last season is a lot of the moves that Guardiola wants, and especially in the position that Manchester City lacks, you know. I think for once, you know, with the situation like the defense that, you know, has been a bit of a challenge for Manchester City for various seasons and not being able to fix it properly, was finally made with the transfers of Kyle Walker, Danilo, and Benjamin Mendy. I think the goalkeeper situation with the departure of Joe Hart and the inconsistency of what Claudio Bravo can bring in the table, you're looking at a young, he's only 23 years old, you're looking at a young, great goalkeeper in Ederson, who can really provide what Manchester City are looking for. And I think in the future, I think that's what Guardiola is really looking for. He's looking at youth, he's looking at the future, and what he can bring to this Manchester City side where has a lot of youth at the table.
Yeah. Now, looking back at Spurs, I mean, is this, you know, are they kind of mailing it in here?
I mean, we would have to see who they get, I think, until the end of the transfer window. We have one more month of this, hardly enough. But I think, unless they're following the if it ain't broke, don't fix it method that Spurs are doing, then by all means.
Yeah, but they've lost a couple of key pieces here, you know, especially for me, Benteleb. Obviously, Kyle Walker's a huge piece for them. I think that's probably the, you know, I think they need to make a move.
Right.
Yeah, so let me see if I can add, let's see, I'm going to actually try Andre by phone this time because right. I think that's going to be a little more stable for him, so hopefully we can get him reconnected. I got to make sure that I don't want to leave it so that it hits voicemail. Hi, Andre.
Yes, hello.
Oh, perfect. Hi, that's much better.
No, so, I think so.
Good, good. Okay, thank you. So we were just kind of following up with the City question, and where we left it off is what would be considered a success, and do you make them the favorites to win the EPL this year?
Sorry, I cannot hear right now.
I'm sorry. For Manchester City, what would be considered a successful season, and do you make them favorites to win the English Premier League?
What would be a successful season for City?
Yes.
That's a difficult one. Certainly a better season than last one.
Yes.
They have to fight for the title until the end, if not win it. And they have to go further in Europe, because that's what is expected. Mm-hmm. And this is the second year. Let's remember, in his second book about Pep Guardiola, which is called The Evolution in English, the Spanish title is La Metamorfosis. The Spanish author, Marci Pedernal, wrote that City would be ready by Guardiola's standards somewhere between 14 and 18 months after the arrival of Pep Guardiola. So that is this season.
Mm-hmm.
So for them to consider a season a successful one, I would say winning the Premier League and going very far in the Champions League.
Okay.
Or of course winning the Champions League and do what they can do in the end of the season domestically. But I think a title, one of each two, is the least that they can do.
Okay. So he's definitely going to be under a microscope to start, especially when you give them the window of 14-18 months. We are starting to get into that window now. So I want to switch focus to another English side that I would imagine is under some serious focus, and that's going to be Arsenal, and more specifically Alexis Sanchez. Supposedly he was going to be returning to camp this week, but many are reporting that he's going to be putting in his transfer request to Manchester City. What's the likelihood of him leaving Arsenal, and then what does Arsene Wenger do if he does leave? Andre, I don't know if you heard that one from me.
Yes, I heard it.
Okay, good.
I suppose Sanchez is upset right now.
Okay.
Because when the market opened, his name was being thrown out everywhere almost in terms of teams with a better chance of doing something real big next season, not only in England, but in Europe too.
Mm-hmm.
So we are. I think we have 1 month left, right, in terms of negotiations and transfers. And I think he's seeing time passing and the possibility of him staying with Arsenal is not something that he would like right now. So my perception is that he wants to play elsewhere. And he was pretty much certain that this was going to happen, and he's not certain right now.
Ah, okay. I do want to focus on one more team, but I want to focus over to Roma a little bit. Over the past, I'd say, 24 hours, Roma has been linked to a couple of different players, specifically Riyad Mahrez over at Leicester City and Lucas Vazquez over at Real Madrid. For me, I think the Mahrez move is a possibility. I think Lucas Vazquez is probably too much of a jewel for Real Madrid to part with. But I'd like your thoughts on the possibility of either of those players moving to Roma this summer.
Well, I think Mahrez is almost as perfect a fit that you can as you can see. Thinking about this the type of team that Roma is trying to build. Under Monchi right now, and the type of work he's used to do in terms of buying cheap and being precise when he looks for talent, and sometimes, as we know, he's used to spending a lot too when he can, of course. And now I think he can, and Mahrez especially. I think Mahrez is a better fit for Roma than Vazquez. Mm-hmm. And from what I read today, they are very far in the negotiations to get him to play for Roma. And that will be a big signing, no doubt.
No doubt about it. Rob, go ahead and take it away. I know you have some questions.
Yeah, of course. Hi, Andre. It's nice to meet you after good times talking. I just want to talk about... I just want to talk about, I guess, the player that, you know, I think the entire world is going to be waiting for his decision. Probably the biggest decision as LeBron James made it in 2010. It's Neymar. You know, it's been made for the last few weeks that Neymar has been strongly linked to join PSG this week. I just want your opinion, and I guess like the perception being made already in Brazil for a player like Neymar going to a club, leaving Barcelona, and going to PSG. You know, what is your opinion about this whole deal if it happens?
First of all, I think it's going to happen if it didn't already happen. I know what I read and what I know, and talking with colleagues that are better positioned to make some assessment about this. So first of all, this is going to happen. He's going to play for PSG. I think that's clear right now.
Yes.
And here in Brazil, people tend to look for one specific reason when this kind of thing happens. So whether it is the possibility of him double his salary and make a lot more money than he is already making, his new contract that he signed 8 months ago at Barcelona, or leaving Barcelona to play outside the shadow of Lionel Messi, or joining the community of Brazilian players in Paris, which is, from my perception, the silliest thing in all of this, but that's not my call. In terms of all these reasons, I think it's impossible to pinpoint one and say, that's it, that's why he's leaving. I think it's a reunion of all those aspects. He wants to go. He needs if he needs to see what he's able to do, far from Messi and far from Barcelona, what I say is more power to him. I'm a strong believer in the ability and the freedom from everyone to decide what's best for them, for their families, for their careers and their lives. So I'm not one to judge him. The one thing I'm curious about is why now? Because he has the chance to do exactly the same deal, the same move, 1 year ago. And we are 1 year away from the World Cup in Russia. So I thought that a guy in his position would be willing to be in a place, professionally and personally speaking, with stability in terms of that, to do the best preparation that he can do to possibly lead Brazil to a World Cup title in Russia. So, and thinking about moving from Barcelona to Paris, moving from Barcelona to PSG, and playing maybe in another system, which might be best for him in the long run. What I'm thinking about is the World Cup, and I know that he wants to do that. He wants to be the leader of a possible Brazilian World Cup champion team in Russia in 2018. So that's the only reason that I'm curious about. Why now? And of course, there's a lot of money involved. There's Qatar and all these plans about conquering the world, quote unquote. And he might be the perfect guy to join the Parisian team and take them to another level. What I would do, and it's very difficult to speak in these terms because we cannot put ourselves in the place of those type of football players in the environment they live and play and the money they make and all they expect from themselves and the people around them and the plan those guys make for them, and they have to run it one way or the other to make everything a reality. So it's very difficult to do that, to do this experiment, let's say. But what I would do, I would be in Barcelona forever, playing alongside Messi and earning the huge amount of money that he's already making, right, and winning as and winning titles and trophies. And this thing about the FIFA World Best Player in the World, I would not give a minute's thought about that. That's what I would do.
No, of course. I think that's that was going back to my next question, because I was going to say that, I feel that a lot of people, I think in Brazil, at least from what I'm reading, want Neymar to succeed and follow in the footsteps of like a Romario, Ronaldo, Ronaldinho, Rivaldo, Kaká, who won the World Cup but also won that FIFA World Player of the Year award. But I think that for a player like him, he doesn't need it. He doesn't need that title him to have a spectacular career in the end.
Yes, I agree with you, and I think the appeal of this award is not as strong as we made it to be, and people might think. Just making a clarification about what I said about what I would do if I was in his place. That's very easy for me to say and to paint that picture and say, oh, let's stay in Barcelona and play with Messi because this is what everybody would like to do. But we are not in that locker room. We don't know what it is to be there and play. We just see them on the pitch and smiling and scoring goals and winning matches and winning trophies and being capable of doing wonderful things. But we just don't know how it is in reality. So if he wants to leave, if playing with Messi has become a burden to him and he wants to go as far away as possible and maybe prove himself superior than Messi, as I said, more power to him. I hope he's happy, but that will be not my call.
And it's not an easy call to make, of course, and I think if he does want to prove himself, yes, going to a club like PSG is going to be ultimate and very career-decising, I would say. It could be bust or break, I would say. But I think we're just going to have to wait and see what happens to him in the long term, where he stands 5 years from now and where he lands, I guess, in the history of football.
I'm sorry, we cannot forget the management of his career. We are talking about his father, and let's not forget also the way that he left Santos to play for Barcelona.
Right.
It's a fact that we know now that when those teams played in the final of the World Club Championship, Barcelona and Santos, Neymar had already agreed to play for Barcelona. So, do you want to see something wrong there? I obviously think I don't agree with that. I have a lot of conversations here in Brazil with colleagues and other people, and there are a lot of people that we just don't think it's right, and it's not right really. But there's another thing, a number that I think that we should not forget.
Right.
In the last two seasons, Barcelona paid Neymar's father more money than the club paid Messi.
Wow.
So that's it.
So wow.
That is it. In the economical aspect of everything, we should not forget that.
No, and I don't think we should, especially considering what's going to happen to him. You know, if something bad happens to his father, then I think that's going to be the catalyst of what you just said. So, yeah, you definitely have a point there. Looking, I guess, now at this eventual replacement for Neymar, you know, who do you see as a good replacement for Neymar? You know, there's been rumors about players like another compatriot of him in Felipe Coutinho. Mm-hmm. Do you think that he's the right player for that, or is there someone else in the world that would be perfect for Neymar's position? Yeah.
This is very interesting, and it's a very difficult position for Barcelona because they are always, since this story began, they are always reacting to news and facts and something else. They are not being proactive, and this is very dangerous for a club who is on the verge of losing a player like Neymar and need to replace him with someone else, or maybe more than one player, because they will have the financial capability to do a splash and go after people. Coutinho is a great player, of course. Is he Neymar? No, he's not. Mbappe might be a wonderful player for many, many years. Is he that player right now? No, he's not.
Nope.
Going after Mbappe would be like a double strike, because you would get him and you would prevent Real Madrid to get him and replace Ronaldo, say, with a younger version of himself, maybe. Although they say that Mbappe is the new Thierry Henry, and it's a lot different than Ronaldo. But those are details. What I think is, Barcelona is in a desperate position right now because they're going to have the money, but they are very late in all those processes about negotiations and transfers that are going on right now outside of that story, you know? So
right.
It's very difficult for them. The management of Barcelona is in a very tough spot, and there is something that is very ironic. The guy who blocked Neymar and Qatar to Barcelona is Sandro Rosell.
Yes.
This guy is in jail right now.
Yes, he is.
And from prison, he is watching Qatar taking Neymar out of Barcelona and to Paris. And this is just, this is tragic. This is the end of the tragedy of Sandro Rosell and Barcelona and possibly Neymar.
Right. No, of course. I mean, I think that that brings the irony of what the logo of, or the motto of Barcelona is, more than a club. So that there's a lot of irony in that, so to say.
Yes, that's terrible because this management which began with Rosell and goes on with Bartomeu, is just like, but it's the opposite of the idea that Barcelona sells to the world.
Of course, of course. And just my last question, thank you again, Andre, for coming. I want to talk to you about a thing that you're a strong advocate for, is video replay. We saw video replay.
Oh, man.
We saw video replay happen at the Confederations Cup, and it was mixed opinion, I think, for some. It wasn't really exactly what a lot of people expected it to be. We're going to see this happen. We're going to see this happen in MLS next week, and we're going to probably see this at the World Cup next year. So I just want, I guess, as a two-sided question: one, where do you stand after the whole situation from the Confederations Cup, and what improvements do you think have to be made for the World Cup next year?
I think about two things. We saw situations where we would say, no, this is not, they are not doing it right. They are messing up the games, and this is not going to work. And we saw situations that were perfectly capable of making football a better sport, and with more credibility, and something that we finally would be able to watch and believe what's going on in terms of respecting what the players are doing on the pitch and in terms of results. So my take is that they have to perfect the system in terms of not messing up with the flow of the game. When we see a replay of a play that it's 50-50 on live action, how long do we take to make a decision at home that it was a penalty or not, it was a goal, the ball was inside the goal or not? It doesn't take three replays for us most of the time to make the decision. So I cannot believe that they would not be able to perfect the system and give us the same kind of decision-making process that is not making the game wait for it for a long time. I think they have to perfect the system in a way that the decisions do not take more than 55, 1 minute max. And I hope they can do it.
Now, Andre, I want to follow up quickly with that, because I'm in agreement with you and your opinion on video replay. So I want to start out saying that. But one thing, or one situation that came up in the Confederations Cup was, and Rob and I talked about this at length that time, was the Eduardo Vargas goal. I can't remember which game it was in, but they went back and looked at it, you know, quite a bit. And Vargas was on sides the whole time, you know, during the replay. I guess he picked up a rebound. I just can't remember the match it was in. But the ball played to Alexis Sanchez, who Cameron. Then got the ball. Which game, Rob?
Cameroon.
It was a Cameroon game. Okay. The ball played to Alexis Sanchez, who then played it to Vargas. Alexis Sanchez was offsides on the play. So I guess part of the perfection for me, and I'd like your opinion on where it should go, is where do they start the video replay of you know, confirming a goal? Do they start it with the pass to Vargas, or do they go even further than that? Because I could see where the pass to Vargas did not help, you know, video replay did not help the situation. But you know, but it could have been remedied if they rewound the tape a little further. So how far back do we go?
Yes, that was very tricky. Mm-hmm. I do not have an answer to you about that specific play.
Okay.
That's one of the problems. I remember the play. I thought long and hard about that play in terms of what you're asking me right now. So mm-hmm. How far back we go on this play to start making decisions?
Right.
And that is something that they have to do, because that is in the core of the whole idea of getting video to help referees. So they have to draw a line, and they have to work with referees to do that. Because I, been reading and hearing opinions about this specific matter for a long time. Players, coaches, fellow journalists, and people in general,
mm-hmm.
They have mixed opinions. I cannot find one referee or former referee that is against the video replay. And that, for me, is the end of the question.
Sure, absolutely. I think everyone's in favor of it, and I think with the way the game runs these days, I don't think it would take away from the game at all. So that's why I said, I prefaced my question with, I am in full agreement with you. I think we do need it. So let's go back. I want to close out with some Monaco questions, just a couple really, because Monaco last year really took us by surprise, I think, a little bit. A very young side. They won the French League. They made the very, very deep run to the semifinals of the Champions League. And they had a beautiful young team, which they have since disassembled, now having a net balance of £111 million in the bank after selling Bakayoko, after selling Mendy, Bernardo Silva, and role players like Valery Germain, who would come off the bench as a striker in many of those matches. So looking forward for Monaco for this year, can they compete in the Champions League and Ligue 1, or are we going to see a collapse this year like we saw from Marseille a few years ago when they sold their big players?
I think anything is possible, unfortunately. Mm. That's a very good question. Remember, the plan for the owner was to be like a second coming of Abramovich. Mm-hmm. He wanted to make a splash and build a team with a lot of stars and establish himself as the owner, the flashy owner of European football in France. Mm-hmm. So, as we know, a lot of problems happened in his personal life, and of course he had financial problems that we would love to have, but for him they were very important in terms of going forward and making that super team. Mm-hmm. He suddenly had lost the ability in terms of money to do that. So I think he had a lot of help to build a different team with young players and going for the future and developing guys. And he was very successful. The team was outstanding. But in this environment, those things are what we always see. Young players promising in a team that is small in terms of these almost everybody. So now they have the money, and they have the model. Are they going to restart and do it all over again, investing in young players, or they are going to play to win now, since the window might be closing?
Sure.
I really don't know, and I'm curious to see what they are going to do. But they were very successful in every aspect of the model of teams right now. So they were very good on the pitch, and they were very good on the transfers too.
Absolutely. Now, they do still have a couple of very nice pieces on the team in Kylian Mbappe and Thomas Lemar. Mbappe, like we talked about earlier, is linked to Real Madrid, and Thomas Lemar has been linked to Arsenal and Liverpool recently. Is Monaco done selling, or are they, or could they possibly move one of these two players in the next few weeks?
I'm shocked that Lemar is still with them.
Okay.
I would suppose that Lemar would be sold very, very early in the market. He's one of the guys that I like the most when watching Monaco play. And if he stays, it's very good for them, but I don't believe it. And it's very difficult to believe that Mbappe is going to be there when the season starts too. This is the guy that everybody wanted from the moment the window opened. So I just don't think they are going to be there in the first match of the season.
Okay. Well, it's amazing, though, with over $1 billion spent in the transfer window this year already, and a billion just in England. Amazing to think that some of the biggest pieces on the market are still quote-unquote available, and we could break all kinds of records before the summer is over, don't you think?
Yes, and this market in Europe is crazier and crazier as the years pass. So, mm-hmm. And sometimes it's because of there is a superstar that's available, or a lot of very good players, and this is the market of the fullbacks. And Pep Guardiola is guilty, quote-unquote, because he broke the record with Walker and then broke the record again with Mendy. So, but let's keep in mind that had he not done that, if it was not Guardiola, if it was not City, it would be someone else.
Sure.
Those guys would move that kind of money somewhere. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think the market for City is very good up until now. Maybe they do something else. Maybe not. But they are very well positioned for next season.
And I think you make a nice little point there, you know, with the focus on fullbacks in this transfer window, especially, like you said, from Guardiola, but also from other teams. I think teams are starting to recognize that it's not all about the flash at the striker position so much as it is being able to lock up a team and really shut them down.
Yeah, because this kind, like Neymar, Mbappe, and, you know, those kind of finishers and superstars on the last third of the pitch, they are very, of course, they are outstanding players. They are as great as a football player could be.
Sure.
But when you go for them, you have to be your team well constructed. If you have the financial ability to get them, but you don't give them a team to shine. It's bad business.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, things are not going to work out. So I think those superstar coaches, they of course know they have to be a team. They have to have a team in position to have a superstar and play and make a difference and take them to another level.
Absolutely, I agree. So, Andre, I want to thank you for joining us and battling with us through the technical difficulties. It's always a pleasure to speak to you, and we look forward to it again the next time.
It's my pleasure, guys, and don't worry about it. We can talk on Skype, we can talk on the phone, and we can talk via, I know, who knows, WhatsApp, and whatever we can work it out to have a good conversation about football. And yeah, then thanks very much for the invitation again. And whenever you need me, I'll be here to talk to you.
Fantastic. We'll speak soon. And that was Andre Fleury from ESPN. Always fantastic to talk to him. Interesting, we talked, Rob, just briefly before we came on the air about the domino effect. And you'd asked him the question about Neymar, and it's amazing how he led right into it without even, you know, prepping him, where we led from Neymar to Coutinho, and you even brought up the Pulisic part, where these dominoes could fall. Even, I think, one of the other dominoes that's potential there is Ousmane Dembele, another Dortmund starlet. There's so many moving pieces, and it's just amazing to think with Neymar still out there, with Mbappe still out there, with the billions that have already been spent in this window, and there's potential that by the end of next week, the number that we see right now is gonna be dwarfed. Let me ask you this, Rob. Is this good for football to have this kind of money just thrown around on teams? Because really, if you think about it, Rob, we're seeing this kind of movement from eight teams, right? Real Madrid, Barcelona, AC Milan. I guess you want to include Juventus in there, but they've been a little on the shorter side. But Juventus, Bayern Munich, PSG, City, Chelsea, Arsenal spent some decent money this year. Man United. 10 teams? I mean,
yeah.
We're talking, you know, in the five leagues that we cover, we're talking almost 100 teams, 98 teams. And we're talking about 10. We're talking about just 10%. So, you know, and we're not talking about any of the other leagues in the world. We're not talking about the Russian league. We're not talking about the Turkish league, who's actually looking to make a few moves in this window. We're not talking about the Dutch. We're not even talking about MLS or Liga MX, and Liga MX has actually made a few moves in this transfer window, and we haven't mentioned any of the South American sides. So we're really talking about a 1% situation. In your opinion, is financial fair play working?
It probably won't if this transfer of Neymar goes through, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of factors are going to have to, or not factors, I would say exceptions are going to be made. With this case, and I think it's just the attractiveness, and I think of the financial power that these clubs have that you've mentioned compared to the rest of the table. So
absolutely.
That's where I see it.
No, I agree. I'll tell you what. Let's get back on track with our show. Normally, we start out with our trivia question and our opening thoughts. But obviously, with the late start tonight, we wanted to bring on Andre and be mindful of his time. So we kind of switched things around a little bit, Rob. So I was supposed to have trivia and then got caught up in travel planning. And didn't get a chance to research my trivia question, but you, of course, as always, save my bacon and rescue me from the dead here. So, it is your charge, sir, and I will do my darndest in 2 weeks to have a respectable question for you. So, what do you got for me?
All right, this is an easy one, I guess, for you. A little easy one before you head out to your trip. I saw this on Bleacher Report, and I thought it would be a good trivia question in case something like this happened. there have been 8 players who have scored 200 or more goals across Europe's top 5 leagues in the 21st century. Can you name the 8?
Okay, repeat it to me one more time.
Absolutely. Can you name the 8 200 goals across Europe's top 5 leagues in the 21st century? So just in league play. No Champions League, no international, no nothing like that. Just in the leagues from 2000 to now. Okay. Players who played from 2000 to now.
Okay. 200 or more.
Yep. Some whose careers already who have even started during that time.
Yeah. I've got 5 names written down. There's 8.
Yes.
Okay.
Bonus points if you can rank them.
Oh, forget it. Well, maybe. I might be able to give you the top couple. So.
Sure.
I've got 6. I've got 6 of the 8 written down right now that I think are safe. Let's put it that way.
So they haven't played in the 90s.
Okay. Only played in the 2000s.
No, I'm saying they played in the 2000s. Okay, I'll say this. If they played in the 90s, their goals don't count.
Okay, so only their goals in this century.
Yes, that's correct.
Gotcha.
In the last 17 years.
I still like my chances. Okay. Discounting there quickly. Sure. Okay. I'm trying to think. Are these guys all still have to be active, or can some of them be retired?
Most of them are still active.
Okay, but there are some retired.
Yes.
Okay, that gives me this guy. Although I don't like that choice now that you... I might take that one off. Okay. Let's go to opening thoughts.
Sure.
And our quick opening thoughts here is actually MLS centric. It was a big week in MLS this week. Let's start out, Rob. Let's see what we got first. Let's start out with the new head coach in LA. And I know that's kind of a lousy way to start it because there are actually 2 new head coaches in LA this week. But let's start with the new head coach of the new team, the first head coach of LAFC. Bob Bradley was hired as the new first head coach of LAFC this expansion season. According to MLS.com, this is from their story. The 59-year-old will return to MLS over a decade after he left Chivas USA to become the head coach of the U.S. men's national team in 2006, a post he held until 2011. Since leaving the men's national team, Bradley has led the Egyptian national team, Norwegian club Stabæk, French league side Le Havre, and most recently Swansea City, which was nothing short of a disaster. But he became the first American to manage in the EPL when he was hired by Swansea. And now he's coming back. You know, I think he got a little. He had a little bit of a rough ride in Egypt. I think what he did at Stabæk was great, and really for Le Havre, which was I think 2 years ago, to just miss promotion to Ligue 1 by I think it was 1 goal, if I remember correctly, Rob.
Something like that. Yeah.
Which he turned the Le Havre team around that was you know fumbling around at the middle of the table, and he went on this fantastic run. You know, I think this, I'm going to give my opinion first, and I'd like your opinion on it too, Rob, is fantastic. I think he's a good, solid, steady ship that a new club would need, and I think he's the right choice for coach of this side, you know, moving into the new existence for LAFC. I think it's a great choice, and I think it's going to be – I don't want to say it's going to be very successful. You know, with an expansion side, you always worry about the beginning, what kind of players they bring in. There's, you know, there's a lot more to do than just bringing a coach, but I think this is a great start for them. So what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of want to compare this to, like, someone of when Tata Martino became the first ever coach of Atlanta United. I think there's a lot of parallels between this one and Bob Bradley joining LAFC. I personally do like it. I think his experience and I guess everything that he's done all around the world, especially in the United States, has gives him the reputation to manage any I guess club here in MLS. Doesn't have to be a new one, but I think this is good for a new club like LAFC. And I'm just excited to see what happens. You know, a lot of things have been said about this club. A lot of things have been said about what players are trying to get. And I think we should be confident in Bob Bradley and what he can do at this new club.
Absolutely. Now, I guess the next big domino would be do they go out and get Zlatan Ibrahimovic and bring him on, especially considering his health. So, but that would be a nice little piece to start with for the new expansion franchise. That's for sure. Let's look at the other move across the city in LA, and that is the sacking of Kurt Arnolfo and the bringing on of Siggy Schmidt as the head coach at the LA Galaxy. Arnolfo, and remember, for you and I, Arnolfo should hold a special place in our hearts. Connecticut native. He's also in the Connecticut Soccer Hall of Fame. I thought, just a little silly factoid there. But was really in a tough spot. He went 6-10-4 in 20 matches so far this season. And really difficult because he'd suffered a lot of injuries. There was a little bit of an instability with the club. And it pretty much led to his demise. Now, Siggy comes on ultra, ultra, ultra experienced in this league. Ultra experienced with the players. This is probably the team he couldn't beat when he was with the Sounders, if you think about it. Mm-hmm. I guess if you can't beat him, join him. But I think, again, another great coaching move, in my opinion, because Siggy's going to bring some serious stability to this team and some experience that comes along with a guy like Siggy Schmidt. So I think this is a great move, and I think you need to concern yourself with the LA Galaxy if you're some of those teams competing in the Western Conference.
Right, of course. And I think a manager like him could definitely turn the ship of what LA has been suffering this season.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So again, congratulations to both those gentlemen as they open the next chapter in their coaching lives. Let's take the focus at MLS, and continue with our opening thoughts. And let's take it away from the bench and put it onto the pitch, Rob. And that was with the huge move that was made this week. And according to the story at MLS.com, it was by Benjamin Bear. It was listed as a record deal. And that is Dom Dwyer to Orlando City. He was traded for $400,000 in general allocation money, $500,000 in targeted allocation money, and $700,000 in future allocation money based on performance. So $1.6 million in money was paid, which was a new record for MLS, and that obviously doesn't take into consideration his wages. Dwyer, the main striker, has been the main show at Sporting Kansas City for a couple of years now, gained his American citizenship, started in the Gold Cup. We talked about him just last week, really, Rob, when we talked about looking at the Gold Cup, looking at the Gold Cup final, some of these players that have performed, overperformed, or underperformed in this league, in this competition. And Dom was one that we had thought was an overperformer, or at least a shining star, to where we think he's going to at least get a look, if not a call, onto the team that's going to travel to Russia to the 2018 World Cup. What are your thoughts on this move, and what's your opinion on Kyle Larin at this point?
Well, I mean, you could definitely play them. I mean, I don't think that is I think that's something that could definitely be told and definitely be made. Mm-hmm. Playing with him, playing with Kaká, and obviously playing Dom Dwyer. So I think Orlando, with the three players that I just mentioned, could definitely contend for an Eastern Con. Hello?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, I must be hearing something. No, I think with these three players, Orlando could definitely fight for that wild card spot in the playoffs, top sides in the Eastern Conference. I mean, it's tight as ever, mm-hmm. as what we've seen at the table. So I quite like it. I think you could still play Kyle Larin both ways, either with Dom Dwyer. But if you do see a situation in which Jason Christ uses more of a Dom Dwyer over a Kyle Larin, you kind of want to start to see, where do you find him? looking forward? Like, what kind of where do you see him in the future of Orlando City? Because I think he's a part of that future with that youth of a new club to show something. But if he's getting, I guess, underused by a player like Dom Dwyer, then you have to start looking at your options elsewhere.
Absolutely. And the reason I bring up Kyle Larin's name is because he has been linked this summer with a few different European teams, that there's even some teams that might have put in a transfer request to have him come over. So that's why I think the situation does bear monitoring moving forward. So, Rob, the one thing I didn't prepare this week while we're on the, we'll close up opening thoughts and kind of jump into some transfer, transfer window moves that have happened within the past week. I don't have my list up necessarily, but obviously today the big move of Nemanja Matic from Chelsea to Manchester United to shore up that defensive midfield. Now that they bring him on, the talk is really Paul Pogba is the guy that's going to really benefit from this, with two defensive midfielders behind him in Herrera now in Matic. It allows Pogba to really be that point person that that he's looking to be and really shine in terms of the offense for them. A couple of other moves, Rob, and I'm just scanning through some of the moves quickly. Obviously, the LA Galaxy going out and getting Gio's brother Jonathan earlier in the week for £3.8 million from Villarreal is a big move. Any moves that come off the top of your head that you, you're thinking of that we might not have mentioned last week?
Not that I could recall. It wasn't really big.
Yeah.
Big movement.
Yeah, amazingly, it was a quiet week, I guess, right?
Mm.
You know, and I'm looking through the moves that were made. Don't really see a lot of huge moves. There's an Ismaila Sarr who went from Metz to Rennes in the French league. That's a big price tag at £15.1 million pounds. There are a few bigger moves that have been made, but really, I guess for lack of a better term, a quiet week, huh? Mm. The Bernardeschi move I believe was made official after our show, so the Juve move for Federico Bernardeschi to Juventus from Fiorentina was also finalized, and a player that we got to see play this week, £35.7 million. That was made at the same time as Benjamin Mendy and Javier Hernandez, so that's probably the only other transfer rumor, but again, the big fish are still in the pond, like we had talked about with Andre and Kylian Mbappe and Neymar. Of course, that saga still continues, and I think that's going to continue for at least another week or so, just because of the money involved in it. I think that's going to happen. So let's what do you want to do, Rob? You want to do Gold Cup or you want to do MLS matches of the week from last week?
I guess I can do the Gold Cup.
Yeah, do it. Let's go for it.
Sure. I guess the Gold Cup that we are obviously talking about is the final that happened, I believe.
Wednesday.
Yeah. Good job. Thank you, Joe. That happened at Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara. It was between the United States and Jamaica. It was a cautious match. We did see a bit of action, I think, early when we saw Andre Blake, arguably the best player of the Gold Cup, mm-hmm. I would say. And that helped that Jamaica side go to where they were on that day, get replaced by I believe it was a foul on Kellen Acosta.
Kellen Acosta went in for the rebound. And Andre Blake's hand got caught in between, and what really looked like a broken hand to start, in the immediate aftermath and treatment of his hand, I believe was termed as 8 to 10 stitches, no break, and he's, I think, about 4 to 6 weeks from returning back to playing for the Philadelphia Union. So that was great news for such a fantastic player in this tournament. Really shining star, and you never know, maybe another guy that could be on the transfer block.
Definitely. Josie Altidore scored the opener in the 45th minute off a free kick. A great shot, I think, made by him. But then in the second half, after 5 minutes, Jamaica equalized from Jivagwan Watson. I believe his it was like a volley on the right.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's right.
It was a good goal by Jamaica, but with 2 minutes to go, Jordan Morris got the winning goal with a right-footed shot to the right corner of the net from 15 yards. And I guess basically won this off-year Gold Cup for the United States. It wasn't pretty, but they did what they have to do, and I guess they can go into the World Cup qualifiers with a bit of confidence now.
Absolutely. And it's a little bit more relief now. We're in the same position as we were 2 years ago, where the U.S. won the first, I guess, off-year Gold Cup. Mexico then turned around and won the next one. They had to play the one-match playoff where Mexico won, and they were the team in the Confederations Cup this year. So going to have to see what you know, what happens in terms of Confederations Cup and that sort of play, which I know is a secondary tournament, but we're going to have to see what how the next head coach, whether it's Bruce Arena or somebody else, treats that second Gold Cup to see if they do go for it and want to get their make their way into the Confederations Cup. For me, I think even though Mexico was bounced out of it, certainly a great way to prepare for some of the competition you're going to see coming into the following year's World Cup. So I think there's some value to it, you know, some long-term value. So it would be upon them to maintain that hold on that particular trophy. But a decent tournament overall. You know, I you know, I think you and I both, the only caveat, Rob, I think we'd say is that wish it kind of ran alongside the Euros, where it ran every 4 years and ran at the same time as those competitions, don't you think?
Definitely, I agree.
No doubt about it. So let's do our matches of the week. Let's cover the matches of the week from MLS last week. Our first one, which was listed, was the FC Dallas-Vancouver Whitecaps match. Boy, Rob blew this one away. I got this one wicked wrong. I had predicted an FC Dallas 2-0 victory in this one. I got a 4-0 Vancouver victory with goals from Bini Ise from Montero twice and Mesquita in the 83rd minute. Only thing to really speak about in this one was a Grueso red card in the 59th minute, but by then the match, you know, they're already ahead 2-0. Vancouver's already ahead 2-0. And on their way to their victory. So, second match, I actually got the right result, wrong score. Toronto FC, I had predicted over against NYCFC. This was a rematch from the week before. I had predicted a 2-1 victory for Toronto after the heels of a draw for these two teams back at Yankee Stadium. This ended in a 4-0 victory with a Giovinco brace, Edwards goal, and a Jose Altidore penalty in this one. A miss on a penalty kick by Morales in the 94th minute would have just added a consolation goal of anything. But again, right score, wrong. I'm sorry, right result, wrong score. I believe, and I haven't seen the kick yet. But Rob, you said you saw it. The free kick for Giovinco on this one. I think it was the goal in the 67th minute.
Yeah, second goal
was something a little short of spectacular, right? Or nothing short of spectacular.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely. So so if you get to YouTube and get that replay checked out, it's supposed to be quite the golazo. So we're just going to give you the rundown on the Eastern Western Conference and the top scorers because we're taking the next 2 weeks off. In the Western Conference, before we go on vacation, Rob, Sporting Kansas City leading the way, 36 points, FC Dallas at 34, Dynamo at 33, Timbers and Sounders at 31 each, and sixth place is Vancouver Whitecaps on 30 points. Outside the playoff spots, San Jose Earthquakes on 29, Real Salt Lake on 25, LA Galaxy on 23 points, Minnesota United on 22, and the Colorado Rapids, last year's surprise, this year's disappointment, I guess you'd have to go with, on 20 points. On the Eastern Conference, Toronto FC leading all teams, 43 points, only three losses on the season after 22 matches. Chicago Fire have lost their last two, and they're on 38 points now. NYCFC on 37, the Red Bull on 35, Atlanta United, one of those great expansion teams, on 34, and the Columbus Crew on 32 points. Outside the playoff spots, Orlando City on 30 points, the Revs on 26, the Union on 26, Montreal Impact on 24, and DC United last place overall in MLS on 18 points after 22 matches. Top scorers in the league, Nemanja Nikolic still leading the way, 16 goals. David Villa on 14 goals. Then we have David Akam and Kubo Torres on 12 goals. And we have a slew of players at 11. Giovinco, Kamara, Ramirez, Christian Ramirez, Max Uriti, Diego Valeri, and Bradley Wright Phillips on 11 goals each. And there's a bunch of guys at 10 goals as well, including my choice for Golden Boot, Fernando Adi. So no match of the week this week that we're going to give you for the for MLS just because of the of our two-week break, and also you've got their MLS All-Star game coming up on Wednesday against Real Madrid. So that's gonna. If you wanted to have a match of the week, I would definitely check that one out. Certainly going to be fun to watch. I don't know, Rob, and you might know, any reports of Cristiano Ronaldo playing in that. I know he had the trial portion today about his taxes in Spain, so probably not going to make it over here for a Wednesday match, don't you think?
I don't. I heard some. I saw something on the Tribune. The Chicago Tribune said that he won't be playing that game.
Okay, so, and that's unfortunate because you know obviously we're going to get robbed of that. So. That's our week ahead and our week in review as well. So we have left the trivia answer to the trivia question, and I've had a couple of minutes to think about it, but I don't have any more names. So, Rob, why don't you give us the question again?
All right, give me 1 second. I just had it right here. All right, can you name the 8 players who have scored more than 200 goals across Europe's top 5 leagues in the 21st century?
Okay, so the easy ones. Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yes.
Lionel Messi.
Yes.
Luis Suarez.
No.
No?
Nope.
Okay. What do you mean no?
No.
Okay, so let's see.
Doesn't have enough.
He had 30 goals at Liverpool that 1 year. He had another 20 last year. You think he scored 20 or more the last 3 years?
In the league, in his league careers, mm-hmm. not counting the Champions League, he scored... Right. 200 and oh wow. Oh no, you know what it is? It wasn't enough because he didn't have enough to play when he was playing at the oh yeah, because you know, at Ajax, he scored a bunch at Ajax, but that's not a top 5 league.
Okay.
I was about to read that. Yeah.
Okay. How about Wayne Rooney?
No.
That's why he's short. Zlatan.
Yes.
Sergio Aguero.
No.
Wow. He doesn't have 200 goals, huh?
No. He doesn't. Not from what I've seen. No, he doesn't have 200 goals.
I know that answer's pretty much wrong. I was going to give you Alex Del Piero, but I think that's wrong.
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Because he had a bunch of goals in the 90s. Okay, so I've only got 3, and I got the 3 easy ones.
Right.
You know, let's think. How about Robin Van Persie?
No.
No. Wow, I'm missing 5 guys.
Yep.
Well, let me think. I don't think Diego Costa is going to be on that list.
No. I'll give you
an Italian player.
That's one of the hints.
An Italian player. Hold on. It's not Luca Toni.
No, but you're getting close.
Okay. I think Christian Vieri is already out of the league at that point.
Yep. Oh, wouldn't have enough.
Right, wouldn't have enough. And Gianluca Vialli wouldn't be there either.
Nope.
I'm going way
so one,
back.
Won a World Cup.
I'm going too far back now.
Won a World Cup.
Matt Gilardino.
Was associated with the club that we saw yesterday.
Oh, God. Not David Trezeguet.
No.
Okay.
But you're also close.
I mean, although he's not Italian, but...
No, but...
That's why I said that's why I said Del Piero.
Players who played in Italy. What did you say?
That's why I said Del Piero. All right, nope. You're killing me, and I'm going to make a fool of myself. And I can't.
All right, I'll give you one player.
Okay.
Antonio Di Natale.
Oh yes, of course. And he's the one that. Yeah, Jesus. He's been playing forever too, or he was. Right. Okay, so Di Natale.
That's one. Like I said, think of a player who's been associated with a club that we saw yesterday for a long time.
And not Pavel Nedved.
No.
All right.
Think of Roma. What symbolizes Roma?
Oh, Francesco Totti.
There you go.
Jesus.
There you go.
3, 4. All right, so we got 5 so far. We've got Ronaldo, Messi, Antonio Di Natale, Francesco Totti, Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
3 more.
I can't believe Rooney's not on that list.
No, he's not.
Really? 200 goals in 17 years.
No.
I can't believe that.
One of these players we saw yesterday on the pitch playing.
Playing?
Yes, he plays. So who are the strikers that you saw?
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't think it was Higuain. I didn't think Higuain.
It is
Higuain. He had all the goals at Real Madrid, too. So, all right.
He's last on that list.
Okay. Is Ronaldo's first, right?
Yep.
Messi second.
Yes.
Ibra third.
Yep.
All right. So we've
two
got
more.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Higuain.
2 more players.
Any hints for me?
One of them won a World Cup.
Jeez, that doesn't knit. How about Thomas Muller?
No.
Okay. Mario Gomez?
He's not German. He's French.
Hold on. Well, Zidane would have been retired by now.
Striker.
Okay.
They're both strikers.
Both French?
No, no, no. One of them is one French. And he's a striker.
Give me a club.
Well, if I give it to him, it's probably going to be easy. Arsenal.
Oh, Thierry Henry.
Thierry Henry.
Okay.
And one more.
God, I can't believe I missed him.
Comes from Africa.
Oh, oh, God.
That's easy.
Oh, my God, I can't think of his name now. Ivory Coast.
No.
Didier Drogba, no?
No, 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 no.
Samuel Eto'o. Samuel Eto'o.
Yes, there you go.
Samuel Eto'o.
All right, so the list of the 8 players who have scored 200-plus goals across Europe's top 5 leagues in the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
Cristiano Ronaldo from United from Real Madrid, 369. Leo Messi with 349, obviously from Barcelona. In third, Zlatan Ibrahimovic playing at Juventus, Inter, Milan, Barcelona, PSG, Manchester United, 268. Francesco Totti in fourth with 210 from Roma. Antonio Di Natale from Empoli, from Udinese a lot of times as well, with 209. Samuel Eto'o, who's played for Barcelona, who's played for Inter, who's played in the Premier League as well, with 208. Thierry Henry, who's played at Barcelona, has played at Juventus, Monaco, and of course Arsenal, where he made his name, 205. And the last one is Gonzalo Higuain, with 202 goals from what he scored at Real Madrid, at Napoli, and at Juventus.
Amazing to think, Di Natale, where did you say, was fifth on that list?
He's fifth on that list. He has more goals than Eto'o and Henry in his career.
And Totti. It just
No. But Totti has one more goal than him.
Oh, so it was Ronaldo, Messi, Ibra, Totti, Di Natale.
Yes.
Wow.
Di Natale is actually the sixth highest scorer in Serie A.
That's amazing.
And the eighth highest scoring Italian player in all competitions.
Well, I think he's had a 200-year career, so...
played since 96. But he's retired last year.
But he's actually, but to remain healthy for that long and to play for that long is just... It speaks to his abilities and just the durability that he had over his career. So
yeah, I was surprised. Yeah. I actually was thinking though, Piero, when I saw that list.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. But I thought about it. And I'm like, Del Piero's career started well before it started in the 90s.
Yeah, in the 90s.
And that's the problem is a bunch. He may have scored more than 200 goals in his career, but there's going to be a bulk of them before the year 2000. So that's the only problem with that. But I'm surprised. I'm really surprised, Suarez. But when you put the top five leagues part there, yeah, he did score a ton at Ajax before he went over to England. So I guess that
Luis Suarez actually has, if I see right here in his league goals, all his league goals,
yep,
he has 255.
Okay, but that includes the Ajax goals.
Calls the Ajax. He's played at Groningen in the Eredivisie and at Nacional in Uruguay.
Yeah, and the other one I'm surprised about. I'm surprised about Wayne Rooney.
Wayne Rooney has, give me one second, has 198.
Oh, see, you missed a couple of sitters, and that's what happens. You get off the list.
He'll probably hit the 200 mark by
this year.
This month, yeah, in a few months.
You would think he would score two goals this year, so.
At Everton, yeah.
Yeah, probably. So. Well, Rob, I've got to say, I'm looking through the list. Shout out again to David Almoyal and the folks over at Calcio Land Podcast, as well as the guys at Italian Football TV and Zeke Tell. I don't think I mentioned Zeke's name for meeting up with you and me yesterday at the Roma Juventus match in Foxborough. Absolute delight to it's one thing to talk to folks on radio, but it's another to meet them in person. And for my part, it was certainly one of the highlights of the day, Rob. To get to meet all those guys and, having spoken to them before. So that was fantastic. So, again, thanks for meeting up. And, Rob, without anything left on the list, should we go on vacation?
Well, you can go on vacation, but I'll still be here. But, yeah, definitely.
All right, let's hit the closing music.
All right.
So, for episode 171 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Andre Fleury for joining us. Program reminder, we are off for the next 2 weeks, but we will be returning with our league previews on August 21st, even though some of the leagues will have kicked off on that previous weekend. That's the way it rolls for vacation time. So, for episode 171 of Low Limit Football. I'm Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and buonanotte!